Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hi, welcome to Women in WP. I'm Angela Bowman. Today we have Allie Nimmons with WP Buffs co-hosting along with me and Amy. Our guest today is Rachel D. Martino. Rachel is the owner of Geek Unicorn, a name I just love. She partners with women-led businesses to elevate them to a professional playing field by creating brands and websites that stand out online. We all want to stand out online. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, and I make them stand out online like a unicorn in a field of horses. That's the tagline.
Yes, yes, of course. It's awesome. As you know, if you've listened to some of our episodes, we like to start off by asking our guests how they got into WordPress. So how did you get started?
You know, I don't quite recall the moment that I was introduced or opened up WordPress for the first time. I started building websites when I was a teenager. So I was like 15 or 16, staying up to like 2-3 in the morning, building websites about Star Trek fan fiction and astronomy and like just like you know, the nerdiest stuff you can imagine. I had the backgrounds with like the twinkling stars, you know, remember those? When like the blink HTML was like the coolest thing ever. and then I would sort of do websites for like projects. You know, like I was a part of a community theater group, so I did some stuff for them. And then it was in, I think, 2011 when it started to be part of my job. So I joined a media department at an international nonprofit, and they were using Expression Engine and Joomla and sort of those old horses like that. And so I must have picked up WordPress somewhere along the way there. And then when I started my business in 2017, we just went with WordPress and ran with it because it's such a good out of the box solution for small business owners.
Yeah. That's amazing. I don't feel like I've ever heard anyone not remember in all of the episodes of this I've listened to and people that I've met, like everyone has like that crystallizing moment where they discovered WordPress, but that's so cool that it just sort of arrived and solved all your problems for you and like just became a yeah. part of your workflow. That's so awesome. Plus I perked up because I'm actually doing a Star Trek Next Generation binge watch right now, so I got really excited.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm heavy in DS9 right now, so I like to like pop it on while I'm doing, if I'm doing a big build, I'll just like play it in the background. But yeah, Star Trek's awesome. But yeah, when it comes to WordPress, I was looking at all the different platforms. So we were doing Expression Engine, Joomla, Drupal, Wix, Squarespace, like Weebly, I've been in all of them. And so I think at just one point, it was especially when I was researching search engine optimization back when I first started, like about 10 years ago or so, it was sort of mentioned that WordPress is sort of the best for that, like when you're doing an out-of-the-box solution at the time. So I think that's why I sort of gravitated towards it, because we were focused on our SEO and things like that. So that's sort of how we picked it. And then it's just so robust and it can really grow with your business. So it just makes sense to use.
I also dabbled in Joomla a little bit back in the early days, and yeah. I actually really liked it as a solution, but my clients, and I didn't make that many of them, but they couldn't figure it out. Like they liked the way it looked, but they would log in and they couldn't figure out how to do anything. And so that's when, and I already had a blog, a WordPress blog, and I was like, I wonder if you could use this for more than a blog.
Right.
That was my aha moment.
Yeah. Yeah. With Joomla, because we had a bunch of umbrella organizations, and one of the umbrella organizations had a website on Joomla. And yeah, the guy who was in charge of it could never figure it out. So I was always being called over to be like, oh, can you go do this on Joomla? Even though it was like his area that he was supposed to cover. So like to your point where it's hard. Yeah, I can see that.
Can we bring back the blink tag?
Yeah, I'm down for it. I like it. I like a little bit of movement, a little bit of sparkle in a website, right?
Because whenever somebody comes to me with a website, they're like, oh, it's so old, it's so horrible. And I'm like waiting for the blink tag, but I'm always disappointed. It's never there anymore. Nobody uses it.
Nobody uses it. I think it was purely for like kids and like teenagers making websites. Like, oh, it's so cool.
I remember them on, you know, all over MySpace. Like that's where I first started dabbling with like HTML. Like so many people was like creating my MySpace theme. And yeah, you want, everything had to have like those little like rhinestones on it and be cute and flashy.
Yes.
And yes, yeah,
totally.
I one day it'll be like fashion, like how 80s fashion comes back in and all that. Like maybe one day website fashion will make a circle back.
Yeah. Well, I think some retro things do come back. I mean, there was some shoe company that built a whole retro website. And I can't remember what it was now, but they basically built like a 90s website for their products. And it was cheesy and tacky and gorgeous.
I think they did that with the Captain Marvel website.
Oh,
Captain
did they?
They did. Marvel, it's Captain out. Marvel's really
yes,
cool.
I just opened it up and it is exactly what we're talking about. It's so fun and cringy and awesome.
We will definitely put that in the show notes. It's awesome. Yeah. And then and you all know Ling's Cars. I mean, Ling's Cars is just kind of over the top. Have you
seen? Oh, right. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So busy. Yeah. And all over the place. Yes. But it's so bad, it's good.
But Captain Marvel, I felt like did the best.
Oh my gosh. I had not seen it before this moment.
Really? Isn't it awesome? Great?
Oh, wow. That is,
I think I'm ready to cry
just a little bit.
I'm going to redesign my site with Elementor, but I'm going to do it in the 1990s style. That'd be great.
Oh my gosh. It's like that Homer Simpson's website. If you ever watch The Simpsons.
Like, don't you want me to build a site for you?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so, this is great.
So tell me how you're doing this whole women-led business niche.
Well, I guess when I first started my business, it was as anybody does, right? Like floodgates open, say yes to everything, and then figure out what you love and what you're able to do really well, right? So I didn't have any particular niche when I first started. And then as I was going along, I sort of felt like my business had no purpose and that I didn't feel like I had a purpose in my business. And so getting up in the morning to go do whatever it was feeling difficult because it was sort of like, oh, what's the point? I wasn't getting any joy out of what I was doing. Even though I was good at it and it was still something that like a thing that I enjoy, web design, it was like, the working with people, it wasn't sparking joy in my life. So I had to sit and really think about, okay, well, what is it that I want to do with Geek Unicorn? Like, what is it that we stand for? What are our values? Like, what is it that's going to get me up in the morning? And I'm already kind of passionate about the gender inequalities, particularly with pay, with even things like getting bank loans and all those kinds of things. Like there's so many ways that women are treated less than men systemically. And so I wanted Geek Unicorn to be about helping to close the financial gap between men and women. And I wanted to do that by building really great websites for my clients so that their businesses could be elevated to a professional playing field so that their business can succeed and grow so that they can succeed and grow. And so that was sort of what kind of drove that decision to go to be serving women-led businesses. But then also I was noticing that women in particular were having trouble finding good web developers and web designers. A lot of times they were working with men and feeling like talked down to or like they didn't feel comfortable asking questions. A lot of them were feeling like they were getting mansplained to. And so I also wanted to be that like a comfortable place for women to go and to ask tech questions and to get answers without having that filter of like, whatever, lady. So that's where it came from.
I've had a similar experience, except that it was also men experiencing that with other male developers. So I've had a lot of male business owners coming to me because their male developer was being, you know, I've heard adjectives like arrogant, unavailable, you know, kind of mean or nasty, like really.
Right. Or really short or yeah.
Impatient or saying they fixed things and they didn't, and, you know, or unreliable or unresponsive. And not to say that all male developers are that way, but it was interesting that was, you know, men want to be heard to and not talked down to. And, you know, just because you're a man and you have a man developer doesn't mean that's going to be a good fit. So, yeah.
Instant bros.
There's not instant bros. No, not at all. I think partly it could be that there is kind of an arrogance that can happen in amongst, you know, the people who call themselves developers, you know, where they feel like any ask of a client is just like them being put upon and oh, this is too complicated, or you shouldn't be asking for this. And, you know, I might ask, well, why do you think you need this? And what return on investment might this bring to you? I don't want them to be adding features that are going to cost a lot and be a lot to maintain or create that aren't going to return value to them. But at the same time, I'll try really hard to accommodate them and be nice about it, you know.
And it's such a secret superpower. Like, I love the way that you kind of turned it on its head, because I feel like stereotypically is what I'm looking for. Women are stereotypically like more sensitive, more emotional, blah, blah, blah. Right. And so if you can say, okay, if I was conditioned as a little girl to be more sensitive and more emotional, I'm going to turn that into compassion, and I'm going to turn that into better communicating skills, and I'm going to provide a service based on those more feminine traits that people were actually looking for in the first place. So I think that's such a cool way of looking at it, of sort of being like, yeah, we are equal. We are the same as men. We are just as good. But I think given the way that society molds us, women do kind of have some different superpowers than some men do. And so for you to be able to use that to help people and elevate them, like that's so amazing. I love that.
I wrote a blog post about reasons to choose women-led businesses. And one of them, and I wanted to make a database. Like, I did not want to make it like pulling out of my, you know, out of my head, like, oh, well, we're just better. Like, I want to actually put down.
I can do anything, you can do better.
And one of them was empathy. So there are studies that that look at the differences between men and women in terms of empathy. And they don't know why yet, but statistically women are more empathetic than men. And it could be that nature that we're just taught at a young age. Again, they don't really know the reasons. But I wrote that as one of the reasons to choose a women-led business, because if you ever have a problem and you need to get, you don't want to talk to customer service, or you want to talk to the owner to get your problem fixed, you're going to, if a woman's behind the counter, like statistically, she's more likely to empathize with your situation and to help. And I think that goes a long way, especially around technical things like websites. There can be a lot of fear for people when they're getting a website built, or if they've had a website for a long time and they don't know how to do something on it, and they need somebody to fix it. Like, there's a lot of anxiety around it. So I think having somebody who's empathetic working with you really helps.
For sure.
And do you only take women-led businesses now? Is that, are you, like, if a man-led business comes to you, you just turn them away?
No, we work with men on referral basis, and we typically work with men-owned businesses if their team is, like, filled with women and or their product or service directly contributes to the financial advancement of women. So a good example of that is one of our clients has an investment firm, but they work specifically through the gender lens. So they're looking specifically at helping women startups and things like that. Another one is like a team of lawyers, and the two of the men are partners, a third is a woman, and then the rest of their associates are all women. So, you know, so it's like a per case basis, but certainly usually they come in with a referral first. Like I've met them, right? Or somebody I've worked with knows them.
Have you ever gotten any pushback from anyone who maybe thought you were giving preferential treatment or saw it in that sort of way? Even though you definitely are not, but have you ever had anybody like be upset?
Not to my knowledge. So, I don't like you don't know who you turn off, right? Like if somebody said, oh, you check out Geek Unicorn, and they log into my website and they go like, oh, but you know, it says women led everywhere. I don't know, but it's a good point, because it is one of the concerns that I have, like in the back of my mind. I think at some point, oh, am I gonna get called out for being not serving all people and everybody, even though I do serve all people and everybody. It's like, for even just saying like, we prefer to work with women, like, is that a bad thing? I don't know.
And how many people are on your team that you work with?
Yeah, right now there's about four. So we've got two junior developers, an admin assistant, and a SEO person. And they're all women right now. Although we have had men on the team in the past.
And is that in addition to you or four?
Oh yeah, in addition to me. Yeah, so five altogether.
Okay. And how
I'm
do
a person
you...
too.
How do you, when a new project comes in, how do you break down who's doing what and how does that workflow work?
Well, for me, I like to have, because I'm sort of the creative director, I guess you could say, and I'm also the account person. So I'm doing all the one-on-ones with the client. And I'm also overseeing the overall big picture design on the project. So I typically do the initial design myself. And then then we have some templated elements that will go into the remaining pages, at which point the one of our web designers will pick that up, depending on their availability. So they might do it, or somebody else might do it, or I might do it. So that's how. And then my SEO person, she does the SEO. I can do the SEO, but it just takes so much time. It's like, have someone else do it.
So I was creeping around on your website, which, you know, anybody that listens to the podcast will know I kind of do that. And I noticed that you have some SEO eBooks.
Yes.
Are those things that you've written?
Yes, I wrote them. So there's the Unicorn's Guide to Search Engine Optimization. That is the latest version. There's another one there called SEO Cookbook, which is very, very similar. It's the original edition. And then the Unicorn's Guide 2 is the updated revised edition. Yes. And it's that the Unicorn's Guide to SEO is really great because it goes sort of step-by-step through SEO for a beginner. And I found that when I was learning SEO a long time ago, that there was lots of information online. Like there's lots of articles you can read. There's lots of guides that you can get, but there was nothing that was like, do this and then go do this and now go do this. So the Unicorn's Guide to SEO is kind of like that, where it's sort of breaking down, I think it's like 12 or 14 lessons, breaking down like, do this and then go do this and then go do this and then go do that.
That's awesome. And do your clients find that really helpful?
Yeah. I mean, whenever I do an SEO package with somebody, I pass that off to them, because search engine optimization is not a one-shot thing. Like, you're not doing the one thing and then that's it. As you all know, you're constantly, you know, every month at least, you're doing something, you're backlink building, you're creating content, whatever it is, checking on your stats, you know, those kinds of things. So the guide helps my clients when I do the one-time work. It helps them then to continue on that work themselves.
It sounds like you're a very systematic thinker, and especially with having guys step-by-step, that's awesome. Running an agency, having other people work under you. I'm sure you and Amy are like sisters on some level with things. Tell us, what are your favorite tools, either things that you use to help with you know, maybe onboarding clients and automating that process and your working in collaboration in a team, but also like what you use for tools in terms of themes, plugins, what you gravitate towards to build sites.
Yeah. So for project management, I use Google Drive and Asana. So Asana is usually where we have our tasks and any conversations around a particular task and our deadlines. And then Google Drive is where all the content goes for any project. So I do very poorly with email. Like I find email so overwhelming when you get like the thread and you're like looking where, I know they sent me their headshot, where is that? And it's got the worst like search function. So everything goes in Drive and then we manage the project in Asana. And then in terms of for plugins for WordPress, I mean the typical ones like Jetpack, Akismet, WordFence, Smush. Just started using Hummingbird to see if that helps with page speed. It seems to be doing pretty good. Yeah, I'm probably forgetting some, but those are sort of my
what theme do you use? A theme, do you use a page builder, like what do you use for that?
Yeah, so I use a theme called ThemeCo Pro. And it's got a builder built in. I think the builder itself is called Cornerstone, or used to be called Cornerstone. And it's just this stunning, I don't know, have you used it at all? No? Oh, I love it. It's so good. So it's drag and drop, visual builder. And unlike Divi, it's not like you want to like throw your computer out the window while you're doing it.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah,
well, it's funny. So, we have guests that have been on that are real big Divi fans. So it's like there's a big Divi divide. You either love Divi or you hate Divi.
Divi divide
for a really long time.
The Divi divide is real. That's our next podcast. Stay tuned.
I could. Yeah, I'll be the anti Divi if you need a guest for that. So ThemeCo Pro is a really great drag and drop builder, and everything's custom. So we're not like popping open a template. We really are building a solution for each individual client. We're not following any kind of mold or anything like that. Obviously, we're doing best practices and things like that, but we're not using a theme as like a template. We're just using it as the builder in the core files.
You said your biggest challenge with someone's got to ask you about your biggest thing that you were proud of, because that was pretty amazing, but we'll get to that. But you said your biggest challenge is just the late deliverables and, you know, and the project's colliding, and I'm telling you, I feel that pain all the time. I feel like I'm constantly living in some state of an avalanche.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So like I try to take on a certain amount of clients every month, but then what happens is the clients don't deliver their content on time. And so now I've pre-scheduled some people for the next month. And now the people I was supposed to do in this month have now collided with the people in this month. I need to honor the people who were set up and scheduled for this month, because, you know, we made an agreement that that's when we would start. And so then it just all goes to mass. So there will be some months where I have, double the amount of clients, sometimes triple the amount of clients that I would normally prefer to have. That's in a manageable state. and then I kind of weed it out and I sort of get into a good zone, and then it happens all over again. So that's been my problem. Yeah. Do you have any solutions for it? Like, have you ever found out, like, what can you do to not have this happen? Please tell me. Well,
I put in my contracts that we wouldn't actually start a project until we had the content, but I actually never have ever enforced that. So
yeah,
no, I don't have a solution.
Okay. So this seems to be common for everyone.
I might have a solution. When I designed and built sites, and I would encounter that. Well, I encountered that problem a lot before I started my business, when I worked at an agency. And I remember when I started my business, I was like, that's not going to be a problem for me. So I had something in my contract that said, you know, if you are X amount of days late in delivering something, I can suspend the project, or I can charge you a fee for basically inconveniencing me and like messing up my schedule. Yeah. And that I only had to enforce that maybe one time. And people would like read the contract and come to me and be like, is this real? And I'm like, yeah. And so they were aware of it. And I almost always got things on time or within a very small window.
I might start doing that then. I like the charge a fee thing. Yeah. Because for sure, once you then finally get the stuff, there's like a pressure to get it done, right? Because mm-hmm. now they've done it, and now they're thinking, well, we've paid you, and now we're ready, so get to work, you know.
I'm such a sucker, though. I have all kinds of things like that. Like I have the disappearance clause. Like if they drop off the face of the earth for a few years and come back, then they get charged a fee. But I never ever charge them the fee. I'm just such a sucker. So any advice on how I can enforce the things that I put in my contract would be great.
Well, I know. I mean, my tip for enforcing things is I pretend that my business, Geek Unicorn Inc., is my boss. And so like whenever I have to execute something, I'm like, well, my boss is making me do it. Even though it's not technically it's I'm the boss making the decision, but it helps to separate yourself and be like, no, I'm representing the best interests of my company. I have to go do this because my company is another person. It's not, at least in my case, because it is incorporated. So it is a separate person and I have to stand up for it and do what's right for that.
Yeah. It's funny. I would do the opposite because it was just me. I would be honest and tell people, listen, it's just me. Like I'm doing everything by myself. So if you don't respect my time is not respected. And all I have, the only teeth I have are, enforcing that fee or, saying your project is suspended until X date and like kind of being a hard butt, or I don't want to curse on the podcast, but like, being kind of mean sometimes. And I always felt like
cuss
people
on the podcast, Allie.
That to me was how I got through it. And like, I figured that if somebody didn't respect that, and if they got really, really pissy and angry and rude, that's not somebody I wanted to work with anyway, but if they respected that and they're like, you're right, I'm sorry, we'll move forward according to what you set out. Like, that's the kind of person that I would make an exception for, like Amy was saying, like, yeah, maybe in that case, I might waive the fee because, you decided to be respectful rather than pissy. So I don't know. Always worked for me.
I'm much more likely to try and enforce it if I don't like the person. But I'm such a people pleaser and I don't want anybody to be mad at me. So I'm always kind of like, oh, great, let's get started.
I'm the same way. I hate disappointing people. It's like probably my number one issue in my life. I'll bend over backwards. But I did make sure I put that CYA thing in my contract. That is, if you're not on time, your project can be rescheduled because I've got other things happening. And so sometimes I have had to use that, and I'm just glad it's in the contract if I need it. And I am really overwhelmed just to say, I told this other client I was going to start on their project April 1st. Yours is getting delayed. I really do have to start on this other thing. And I've had to do that, a couple times, and people have been pretty nice about it. And realizing what gets me is people who hold off on their content forever. I mean, like we're talking months, right?
Yeah.
You've built the whole site around whatever designs or whatever in hopes that this content is going to be finalized. And then they're like, 1 week before you're going on vacation.
Yeah.
They're like, we're ready to go now.
We're ready.
Can we have it done by Friday?
Exactly.
When I go on vacation, I let all my clients know like 3 weeks beforehand. Like last summer I went to Europe. And so, I gave like a big long lead up to all my clients. Like I'm going away. I'm not answering my emails. Usually lots of communication and advance warning helps.
What this vacation is you're talking about.
What is this you speak of?
Are we allowed to go places ever again? No.
Not right now. Okay,
I'm going to go to the hospital for vacation this year because it's the only way I can get like stop doing work.
they've got good Jell-O.
Depressing, Angela.
It's so depressing, but I'll have a hard stop with a lot of Netflix.
I have a question. So Rachel, go ahead, Allie.
Oh, I was just going to ask, you do the, designing, building websites, you do SEO. Do you have any like recurring revenue services that you offer where you're able to turn, you know, a happy customer into a forever customer?
Yeah, we do have a support package. And so we have quite a few clients on that. And then a lot of our clients add stuff later on. So when, especially when COVID hit, there were a couple clients who needed to update their sites. One in particular that was ready now to launch a course. So so that was a bigger project. A lot of a couple of our clients redesigned their sites a few years later because the it's been over three and a half years. So some of those early clients are now coming back saying, you know what, we've changed our business a little bit. It's not that the design is bad or anything like that from the first time. It's just we've changed so much that now we're looking to redo our site. So sometimes that's that that comes into play. But yeah, for sure, our workload seems to be kind of 50-50, like return clients and new clients. Yeah. So it's good. It's nice to know like the people that you're working with and to get in a good flow. That's one of the reasons why I started Geek Unicorn was because I recognized that small business owners don't need a web developer. They don't need an SEO person like full time working on their stuff, but they do need somebody trusted that they can go to who knows enough about their business and enough about them to pick it up and go like, oh yeah, I got a good solution for you. Let's do this. Let's do that. Did you think about this? Did you consider that? Like those kinds of things, like that trusted advisor that they can go to. And that's sort of part of what I endeavor Geek Unicorn to be as well, is somewhere that people can come back to and feel comfortable to say, hey, we've got this idea. Like, how do you think we should execute it online?
So what has changed for your business since COVID-19, if anything?
We changed offices. So now I'm in my home with unpainted walls. Actually, you can probably see here, I've got like, I'm just testing out paints right now to see what color to paint it. Yeah, so we shut down our office because we had an office partially because we started it. I have a four-year-old is my youngest. So at the time, he was too young to also be working at home. But I was also meeting clients and I was occasionally doing workshops. We would have group meetings there occasionally if our team was Toronto-based. Right now, our team's not Toronto-based, so it doesn't matter. Then when COVID hit, I found I was staying home a lot. I wasn't going to the office. And so it was just working. So that's one thing that changed for sure. I think also just slowing down a lot more, even just for myself. Like when COVID hit, there was actually an increase in demand for web designers. I'm sure you probably felt that as people wanted to update their site, they wanted to put on an announcement or they wanted to launch a course or whatever it was. And there was no real time to slow down to process a global pandemic, you know, even just for myself as a human being. So I think it was maybe like a month or a month and a half after COVID hit, I did like really ramp down production and only just now kind of ramping back up just to have like some breathing space for myself.
And I see that you had a website weekend where you helped an organization. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So, I can't give away too many details because I won't even say why, but they were a not-for-profit that was set up in the 80s and they just never had a website because they never needed one. They're sort of a very specialized thing that they do. They support journalists in Ontario. And, when COVID hit, obviously, community newspapers were hit really hard. Journalists were hit really hard because a lot of publications rely on ad revenue. So that's their primary source of revenue. It's not like buying the paper. It's the advertisers in the paper. And of course, because businesses were shutting down or closing their doors or scaling back, they weren't putting ad dollars into journalism. And so the charity wanted to have an online donation portal so that people could donate so they could raise money to support all these journalists. So they were ready to go. I got my marching orders on a Friday. I built it on the weekend. Monday, it got approved and it launched the Tuesday. And within a few weeks, they raised over $10,000. So it was great.
And what did you use for your donation portal?
GiveWP. And it was
That's
the first.
I was going to ask.
Yes. Hey, give. And it, yeah. And they were so, Yay, they were give. So great. I had questions, you know, for the setup and things like that. So they were awesome. Yeah. So big shout out to them for sure.
I used to work there, so I'm unreasonably excited that you good. Used them and that it worked.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah, I will definitely use them again. It was a great plugin, and good support.
Awesome.
Are you involved in the WordPress community if they're in Canada?
No, I would like to be though. I sort of didn't even really know about it for the longest time. Actually, I met Michelle, who you guys probably know on Twitter as well. I'm blanking on her last name, but she also works at Give. So maybe Allie, maybe.
Yeah, Michelle.
Michelle.
Yeah. Okay. Now Frechette. Yeah.
She's been on the pod.
WordPress mom.
Yeah. So, I think I met her not that long ago, but she introduced me to this concept that there is a WordPress community and that there's something called WordCamp. But then the pandemic happened. So everything shut down and I haven't been able to go anywhere.
So once the pandemic is over, if that ever happens, are you looking to go to some WordCamps? And if so, which ones?
Yeah, for sure. I would go to a WordCamp. I don't know. There are different WordCamps. Is it like the convention circuit? Like there's Comic-Con and then there's like Star Trek convention and there's different ones.
Well, there are, yes, they're like city-based ones. Like my first one was WordCamp Las Vegas, and I've done Boston, Chicago, and, you know, some others like that. But then there's like WordCamp US, and I'm sure there's WordCamp, I don't know where you are, and then WordCamp Europe, WordCamp Asia. But we were all set, all the podcasts, we were all set to go to WordCamp Europe. And then, you know, and it's been, you know, they did it online, and then they've already announced that next year's will be all online, which is kind of a bummer because I still have all my Air Portugal credits.
Me too.
That I need to use. So I might just be going on vacation to Portugal.
Yeah, well, might as well. I would for sure check out the Toronto one. I think there is one. I think I saw it on like meetups or something like that. Yeah. And I would love to go like to a big one somewhere. That sounds like fun too.
I highly recommend WordCamp US. I've never missed it. It's like my favorite every year. It's where I get to see all my WordPress friends. And, you know, but I'm bummed that, of course, it's online this year. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of things are moving to online now.
I just can't get myself excited about going to an online conference. I haven't even tried. I should.
I wasn't excited, but then they needed me for WordCamp Denver to do intros for the speakers. And then, oh, by the way, can you also lead a panel discussion with Chris Lemma and, you know, these other really well-known people? And I was like, okay. So I had to do it and I had to get involved, but because I had a job to do, it gave me a purpose. And so I needed to be on all day to fulfill that purpose. And it was really surprisingly fun and cool. And so I was partly monitoring the YouTube. So what a lot of WordCamps are doing is if you are someone who is introducing speakers or you're a speaker, you're on Zoom. And so you've got this whole Zoom thing going on, but participants or attendees of the conference are on YouTube, or they can watch the feed on the WordCamp website, which is also the YouTube feed, and they can make comments, and people were really interacting and stuff on the comments. And then they had private rooms, different companies sponsored different private chat rooms. And so Yoast had their room. And so I went and just hung out with the Yoast people for about an hour. And it was super fun and got to meet a few other people. And it was definitely not as draining to me as being somewhat introverted to do it online, because you're not having to be like physically present with a bunch of people for a whole day, which can be super intense. And especially at WordCamp US, where there's a lot of people. But just being able to kind of be behind the scenes and engage in that way, it does help if you do it with someplace, I think, local, or a place where you already know that people are going to be, because you'll have that kind of feeling of connection. So maybe Rachel just find out the next WordCamp that Michelle's speaking at.
Yeah.
Since you have a connection with her, and then at least just make a point to tune into her presentation, like find the women or the speakers that you like to hear speak. And I was amazed with the quality of the presentations. Were so well done. And I learned so much, and I'm so glad that I did it. And so now I'm thinking, oh, I really ought to find another one to participate in.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good. And you mentioned being an introvert. I'm an ambivert. When I'm in a crowd or when I go to a convention, I get so much energy and I get so excited that I think I miss that piece when it is online. So, cause I like the buzz of like being in person with people and catching people's energy.
You can get the buzz like in the chat and going to the private rooms and it's actually more intimate conversation because it's not like a huge group of people. It's like, there might be just six or eight people in the Zoom room. And it's kind of fun. Have you done any of those, Allie?
I've spoken at a few since everything started going online. I spoke at a few. I'm kind of more like Amy, where I haven't gone to any of the WordCamps. Like, I've been attending more kind of like the webinars that people are hosting and the smaller meetups, because it's like an hour. And, you know, you see some people you know, you make some new friends, but I haven't committed to like a full weekend of, yeah, I'm going to be online and going to, you know, talk after talk after talk. Like, for me, when I would go to WordCamps, it was almost like a vacation. Like, it was like a work vacation. I get to travel to a different city, stay in a hotel, you know, experience a different city. Like, there's a very special aspect of like leaving your house, leaving your comfort zone and experiencing something totally new. And, you know, meeting Twitter friends and catching up with old friends and like all of that is kind of watered down with the on events. And there's benefits, right? Like, you can now see all of these talks completely for free, whereas in the past you have to pay something to be able to go to a WordCamp, whether you're traveling or not, there's still a fee. But I'm more in the same boat as Amy, where I'm like, you know, I'm sitting here 8 hours a day and I don't really want to be sitting here Saturday and Sunday also, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather be sleeping or watching Star Trek or doing something else. And like, it does suck. Like, I would like to be more active and see my friends and talk to people more and learn. I mean, that's what the camps are there for, right? To teach us things, but I just can't bring myself to get in that same mindset that I would for, you know, getting on a plane and going somewhere. So maybe that's super selfish of me, but I just haven't been able to do it.
Oh yeah. I miss that so much. It does help if you're someone who's doing an MC job or introducing speakers, because then you do get to connect with people, you know, and meet new people a little bit more intimately that way. Yeah. So maybe volunteering. Yeah. Rachel, volunteer for your online WordCamp Toronto. Yeah. Do a talk. You should submit a talk. I think you could do
great that would be fun.
Women-led business talk. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I would love that. That'd be great. I love speaking and I love podcasts, so it's great to be on here too.
Well, it's been awesome having you on today. Before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find you online?
Yeah, my website is geekunicorn.com. I'm mostly on Twitter as geekunicornweb, but you can also find me on all the other social channels somewhere in some form. But those are sort of the primary ones.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, or join our Facebook group. We would be honored if you subscribe to the show. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. Finally, if you want to be on the show or know someone who would, visit our website at womeninwp.com. Until next time.